We have our first big trade of the offseason, this between the Kansas City Royals and the Cincinnati Reds, with Jonathan India and Brady Singer swapping teams. Who won the trade? We'll tell you next. Yes, welcome on into First Pitch for Monday, November 25th, your source of news, notes, and updates on Major League Baseball. I'm your host, Lindsey Crosby. Follow me on Twitter at Crosby Baseball. He's Troy Brock, Troy B Baseball on the Twitter machine. We do get Christian back. He should be back on tomorrow's show. And remember, tell all your friends, firstpitchpodcast.com, to get all of their updates on Major League Baseball. And Troy, I want to get to the news that Juan Soto is expected to start receiving offers this week. I want to get to Friday's non-tender deadline and some of the surprises. We saw some of them coming, some of them we didn't. But first, we talked about this last week as a possibility. Jonathan India and Brady Singer being swapped for each other. Little bit of extra stuff in there. Outfielder Joey Weimer, a former top prospect of the Brewers who had joined the Reds, also going to the Royals in this deal. Top of your head, snap reaction, who won the trade?
I'd have to say the Royals. Top of my head, snap reaction, definitely the Royals. They're getting two players and the Reds are getting one. And just from what we talked about last week, neither of us think that Brady Singer is going to do really all that great at Great American Ballpark. So it's got to be the Royals that win this trade.
Yeah. When I dove a little bit into, like, my first reaction is also, yes, I think the Royals got the better end of this trade here. When I dug a little bit more into Brady Singer, I don't think it's as bad as maybe I initially thought it was. When you look at career 49% ground ball rate, which is obviously something you have to have, when you're swapping out Jonathan India for Matt McClain, we're thinking, you know, a couple different options it could be in that infield. You have multiple guys, right? But the defense should be a little bit better behind him. I think it's going to end up okay. His homer rate has kind of been around 2.8% for his career, which is below MLB average. I do worry, obviously, that's going to tick up in those small dimensions. But ultimately, I do still think the Royals got the better end of this because the fit is so ideal, right? We talked when we previewed the trade about nobody in baseball took more at-bats with the bases empty in front of them out of the number two hole than Bobby Witt Jr. And so getting a guy in Jonathan India that can get on base so consistently. I mean, he has a career 412 on base, which was higher than anybody that batted from the leadoff spot for the Royals last year. I think they used like five different players, and I think everybody was under 400 or was under 350 and on base. And so getting Jonathan India, even if he's not hitting a lot of power, right? He's maybe getting some doubles, a couple of triples and things like that versus hitting home runs. The fact is it's a guy on base. And I think that's the big win, especially for a Royals team who really just ends up trading the money. They just swap the money for the guys. So they haven't yet had to pay the free agency premium you always see, and they've gotten significantly better.
Yeah, 100%. It's gonna drastically increase Bobby Witt Jr.'s RBI totals next season and for however many years India is in Kansas City Royals, and also Joey Weimer. We talked about all last week that they needed to upgrade their outfield. He hasn't been great in the majors so far, but if he could go to Kansas City and figure out how to hit in the majors, he's what, 25 years old right now. He'll be 26 before the season starts. If he can put it together in the majors and be what the Brewers originally thought he could be as a prospect and at the major league level, then that's going to be a big boon to their lineup as well. Just because of the lack of production that their outfield had last year.
Yeah. Weimer's a really surprising or interesting profile to me. He's 6'4", 226, but he's never really hit for a ton of power. It feels like it's there, but he can't really get it out. His best minor league power season, 2022, between AA and AAA, two-thirds in AA. He hit 27 home runs in 109 games. And, you know, it's his, he hit 21 in 2022 across, you know, 127 games. Like he's been in the 20s for homer totals. In the majors in 23, 132 games, batted 204 with 13 homers. But he's a guy, he can play all three defensive positions for you. I feel like he's probably best suited to a corner. He played a lot of left in Milwaukee, played a lot of left in Cincinnati. But again, if you can figure this out, and I think that's really the big thing here for Joey Weimer, is if you can figure that out, then you're in a position to upgrade the outfield like you needed. And worst case scenario, you have a little bit of platoon insurance with Joey Weimer. He's a guy that, like, it's just, I don't know. He was a top prospect for a reason, right? And even in that 2023 season, he batted 267 against lefties. So, like, there is absolutely, he hit a 517 slug, seven homers and 121 plate appearances against lefties. So, nothing else. Short side of a platoon, can platoon with one of your corner outfield spots while you see if you can fix them into an all-around contributor. I really do like the deal for the Royals, and I do think, short of now not knowing what to do with Michael Massey, because Jonathan India, if he is in fact going to stick at second base, I feel like Michael Massey had some potential there. I'm kind of curious about how you configure the infield. But I do also think, you know, India does have some experience in the minors and things like that, playing in a corner outfield. His arm strength isn't great, but his sprint speed is good. This is possibly something where they end up, maybe they try Jonathan India in a corner and let Michael Massey play some second. India probably shouldn't play third with the arm strength, but I imagine either Massey or Garcia can man in that. You got options here for Kansas City. I think that's the thing you want right now at this point in the offseason.
Yeah, absolutely. It's always great to have that depth going forward and things that you can toy with until the season starts and have things figured out at that point. And who knows? They might not be done because, like we've talked about already, they're probably not going to make any splashes in the free agency market, so they might not be done making trades. There might be another trade on the horizon for the Kansas City Royals to have even more of an improvement before the 2025 season.
Yeah. Moving on to the other news from last Friday, the non-tender deadline. We kind of previewed some of these decisions to be made. There were a couple, I guess, surprising moves where teams decided to move on from guys that they could have tendered a contract to. I know we talked a little bit about this briefly, but how surprised were you that Austin Hayes was non-tendered by your Philadelphia Phillies?
This one was pretty expected just because of the lack of production that Austin Hayes had after coming over to the Phillies in that trade. And it really was not all his fault. He dealt with a couple of injuries, including a pretty,
like a pretty severe kidney infection. Right?
Yeah. That was one of them. And then I'm blanking on what the other injury was, but, and then also Rob Thompson didn't use him right.
Hamstring strain.
Yep. And the Phillies had a lot of those in 2024, but Rob Thompson didn't use him right. They tried to force Austin Hayes into an everyday role, and he's not built for that. He is the weak side platoon guy is essentially what he's made for. He cannot hit right-handed pitching, and they tried to force him into an everyday role in left field, and it just did not work. And so it's really not all on Austin Hayes. It's kind of on the team as well, but I was still not surprised that Austin Hayes was one of the non-tendered players on Friday.
Yeah. It feels like, you know, 2024 was mostly a wash for him. 2023, yeah. If you'll remember, if everybody will remember, he was a Gold Glove winner. And granted, it's left field, right?
But, and an all-star.
You know, something where the arm was really good. The range was perfectly average, right? He's not going to be, you know, he's range was, I think, 45th percentile. Sprint speed was like 53rd percentile. And it was, you had a little bit of offensive questions about what he could do. I do think $6.4 million was probably a little bit high for what he showed you in 24, but based off of 23, he's a really, he was a Gold Glove finalist in left field while he was an All-Star. Theoretically, he could man center field in a pinch, but he really does feel like a corner outfield type. It felt like Philly already has that in Brandon Marsh. Like, you already have that guy who can man center, but is really better suited for a corner. Is it possible? I've heard some rumors that they're looking at, like, maybe trading Nick Castellanos. They made him available in trades. How much work, this is a side note here on this topic, but how much work does Philly need to do in this outfield for 2025 for it to live up to what the infield has been able to do with Bryce Harper, with JT Realmuto, with Trey Turner?
Yeah, there's a good bit of work that needs to be done on both sides, offensively and defensively, just because of the lack of defensive production that you get in right field from Nick Castellanos, unless it's the postseason. And then in left field, you know, Brandon Marsh is good defensively, but he's been really inconsistent offensively. He'll have stretches where he's one of the best hitters on the team for a month, and then for 3 months, he'll be one of the worst hitters on the team. And then Johan Rojas... In my opinion, I think Johan Rojas needs to stay in center field every day just because of what he does defensively. He does not provide really any offensive production, but defensively, he's in that tier of guys in the National League that you can just spin a bottle and whoever it lands on, that's your center field Gold Glove winner of the year. But Nick Castellanos, he has not lived up to his contract in his time with the Phillies. He's made $20 million a year. Every year, there's still two more years on his deal, and per B war, and one war being worth $5.7 million, roughly, he's been paid $60 million so far, and he's been worth under $14 million in that regard. So it's not been a good contract. They definitely need to move on from him and find an upgrade like Juan Soto.
And interestingly, a lot of MLB front offices have now kind of discussed that they think the proper calculation for WAR is closer to like 9 or 9.1 versus being at the kind of commonly considered lower number, simply because of how much the top free agents have slanted that. Because you have to remember the whole idea behind WAR, and this is, is how much better a player is than the average replacement level player. And the contracts you see for the stars, for the Shohei Ohtanis, what Juan Soto is going to get, what Bryce Harper got, all of those big, Aaron Judge, all of those big deals have pushed the value of somebody better than league average up. And so there's some front offices who have this calculated as high as 9.1 WAR or 9.1 million per WAR. So definitely something you got to figure out. A lot of work in the outfield. There's a lot of, I think, trade options. We'll do a show later in the offseason. We're going to do shows for each team, kind of little shorter shows going into what this team should look at. And I think the Philly conversation is mostly going to be a succession plan at catcher behind JT Realmuto, and how do you fix this outfield? Because trades, free agency, there's ways to do it, but it definitely needs to be addressed. I think one of my surprising non-tenders was Kyle Finnegan by the Washington Nationals, especially because they didn't bother to move him at the deadline, and then they turned around and non-tendered him this year. Projected to make $8.6 million in free agency, so he would have been expensive going into his age 33 year. And yes, 38 saves. I'd argue he did struggle a little bit from a performance standpoint, but Kyle Finnegan feels like the kind of guy that can be fixed rather easily. Like, when you look at what he does, his fastball isn't great. Guys batted almost 300 off of it last year. He throws it almost 70% of the time. And so you definitely have to, like, the locations aren't great for it. He definitely needs to throw it a little bit less. His slider has been phenomenal, like 6% of the time for the usage, but like 30 something percent whiff rate, right? The weighted OBA against is like 118. He has a splitter as well, and the splitter also very good pitch. And so it feels like the solution here is reduce the four seam usage down from like 70% down to like 50, throw the splitter and the slider more, maybe add a sinker. I think Gavin Stone's a guy that you could kind of emulate. He added the sinker to keep guys off the four seamer. And all of a sudden, Kyle Finnegan is perfectly fixed. And I do think he'll get less than $8 million in this class simply because of some of the, you know, 3-8 record, 3.68 ERA, whip of 1.3 and all of that. But it's still a former all-star closer who has 88 career saves. Just an interesting decision to not trade him at the deadline and then to non-tender him. Who else, or is there anybody else kind of stood out to you as what is this guy doing on the market?
Brendan Rodgers of the Rockies was a big one just because of how hyped he was coming up. And yeah, he hasn't really lived up to that hype. And, so it was just, but it was still surprising that the Rockies were like, we're done.
And that was something where like he won a gold glove in 2022, but like he was well below average this year. He doesn't really run. He doesn't get on base a ton.
Yeah.
And it's just like, okay, you should have just traded them at the deadline. I'm assuming nobody offered anything valuable. It was $5.5 million, but like they're moving on from it. Okay, I get it. You got a lot of hot middle infield prospects like Adele Amador. Okay, sure. Brendan Rodgers is gone. It's weird, but I get it when you think about it. Yeah.
No, yeah, for sure. But real quick, we do have some breaking news to on the podcast. The Angels just signed a starting pitcher by the name of Yusei Kikuchi from the Houston Astros.
Really?
Yep.
Live on the pod, they signed Yusei Kikuchi already.
I'm glad that happened now and not 5 minutes after we turned the recording off. Like
that's
it normally does.
3 years, $63 million, as reported by John Heyman of the New York Post. Okay, so we saw them. Obviously, they traded Griffin Caney away to the Braves a couple weeks ago, who the Braves non-tendered over the weekend.
Yep.
Then they non-tendered Patrick Sandoval because he had Tommy John. He's not going to be back until, I think, at best, August or September. So I think Sandoval can get one of those two-year deals, kind of like Brandon Woodruff signed with the Brewers, kind of like Tyler Molly got with the Rangers. But they needed starting pitching. Adding Yusei Kikuchi, I think he was much better in Houston than he was in Toronto. You saw some of the tweaks they made to his arsenal, to his pitch usage, you know, whether it was going more fastball and slider and all that stuff. I find it interesting that they're striking early, that they've really been aggressive, more so than anybody else, at going out and signing guys in the first weeks of free agency. They traded for Soler, which I still think was maybe a questionable move because now you can't DH Trout or Ward or somebody like that, or Rendon. They signed Travis d'Arnaud. I would assume now Kikuchi's the number one in the rotation, right? You look at who you have. You've got two other lefties, Reed Detmers, Tyler Anderson. Two other righties in Jose Siriano and Kyle Hendricks. Don't really know what you're doing signing Kyle Hendricks at age 35 in 2024. Right. But Kikuchi's now the number one in this rotation. I don't hate the move. I like Kikuchi better than Hendricks. Yeah. I think I'm just surprised that it happened this early in free agency.
Right. Yeah. Like, I mean, we talked about before we hit the record button today that everybody's waiting on Juan Soto to sign before things really get started moving in free agency. But it's Kikuchi was a benefactor of one of the three teams in baseball who are just pitching factories. If a pitcher has not had a good career or has not lived up to expectations, they can go to the Houston Astros, the Tampa Bay Rays, or the Atlanta Braves and get things figured out. The only question for me is, was he with the Astros long enough for that stuff to stick? Because he was only there since the trade deadline, and he had a fantastic couple of months with Houston and the best stretch of his career, really. And so it's going to be interesting for me to see if he can continue that success away from Houston. I was fully expecting him to stay with the Astros and them to re-sign him. So this is a surprising one for me, but yeah, it looks like the Angels are trying to at least be a little more competitive this year.
They're trying to pull the Royals and just being aggressive early and often in free agency. Yeah. On the context of what he did with the Astros, it was 10 starts, 5-1 record, 2.70 ERA, 60 innings in the 10 starts. So he averaged 6 innings every start, 76 strikeouts to 14 walks, did give up 8 homers. So the homer rate, I mean, right there around his, like below his career numbers, but still 1.2 home runs per nine innings. And that's kind of the issue you're going to have. I mean, he is a fly ball pitcher. You know, it's something where he ground ball rate, the highest was one of the highest of his career this year in Houston. And it was only 45%, right? Mm-hmm. His, you know, his career average is right there with the MLB average for ground ball rate. But I feel like a lot of this stuff can stick because it's things that you can carry over, right? It wasn't a, hey, we're going to have our catchers do all of these different things. Like, I do think I was watching Finnegan. One of the issues that the Nationals had was the catcher target for him almost every time was middle of the plate or middle low. And it's that idea, the Rays do this too. We just give you a target in the middle of the plate every single pitch because we know you're probably going to miss. Odds are most guys miss their targets by 8 inches. We're going to give you this target. And when Finnegan missed, he missed in the right place to get taken deep. Right. And so but with Kikuchi, it was almost all usage. It was almost all your pitch mix. I feel like a lot of that can stick. My question is the defense there in LA going to be good enough to turn those league average number of ground balls into outs, right? Anthony Rendon at third base is nothing great. Zach Neto was possibly not going to be ready to start the season after offseason surgery. Luis Rengifo, who I like a lot, is defensively not that great at shortstop. And so is the defense going to be good enough to turn these into outs? And I just, that's the question I have, but I still love them being aggressive. I did like Kikuchi for a couple other teams. I think this is a great signing. And I'm just glad that there's now another prominent Japanese pitcher in on the Angels. Just feels right after having Shohei Ohtani for so many years.
Yeah, for sure. And maybe he can do for them what Shohei Ohtani did for them. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah. There we go. It's a, let him go ahead. And just out of curiosity, has he ever batted in his career? I don't think I'm looking.
He has
two career plate appearances, one at bat in Seattle in 2019. No, I'm sorry. He has four career plate appearances, three at bats, three strikeouts. And I think he was hit by he had a sacrifice on the other one. So there you go. He has four career. He's probably not going to pull a Shohei offensively, but pitching wise, I do like the addition just because I like Yusei Kikuchi and I think he can do well. And I do think having three lefties in your rotation for the most part is an advantage because on average MLB hitters do worse against lefties than righties. And I got a lot of little latent frustration with Cubs fans when they talked about possibly signing Max Fried. And they were like, well, that would give us too many lefties in the rotation because they already have Justin Steele and Shota Imanaga. And I'm like, I don't think that's really a thing. I don't think if you have three lefties among your five or six starting pitchers, it's that big of a deal. I really don't. Now, if you had five lefties in your six-man rotation, that's a problem. But having it equally distributed 3-3, Atlanta in 2023 was amazing against lefties to the point where teams were stacking their rotations to avoid the lefties. You can manipulate the rotation. If there's a team that's really good at hitting lefties, you can just give somebody extra rest and not throw the lefties against those guys. I don't think it's an issue to have three lefties in one rotation. I like this signing for the Angels.
Yeah, I like it too. I like it too. And like I said, maybe it'll make the bottom half of the American League West a little bit more competitive.
Yeah. All right. Talking about guys signing early, there's a report from Buster Olney of ESPN that sources involved in the Juan Soto talks say that teams will be sending actionable offers this week to Juan Soto's camp. Mark Feinstein at MLB.com had said the feeling around the industry is that he could sign before the winter meetings. So winter meetings start December 9th in Dallas. Do you think by the night of the 8th, Juan Soto has chosen his free agent destination?
By the night of the 8th, chosen, maybe, signed, no. I don't think he's going to sign until maybe a day or two into the winter meetings. But honestly, he might already have picked out where he wants to go now without even having any figures in front of him. But yeah.
hearing that the Mets will beat any offer by $50 million, which is a rumor, but it's an interesting rumor. Hearing that, he could very well already know he's going to be a Met. We just have to wait on the final offers to come in so he can then go to them and say, here's the highest offer I have. Beat it by your $50 million and I'm yours. But I don't think he's going to be signed until after the winter meetings. I think he's going to have it narrowed down to just a couple teams entering the winter meetings, but somebody's going to try to make a last push, want one more meeting. Somebody's going to do something. And we know Scott Boras is a showman. He likes the attention. What does Scott Boras do at the winter meetings every year? He sets up with a backdrop outside of the media room and does his own press conference. And if Juan Soto is still a free agent at that press conference, I guarantee you it will be even more heavily attended than usual, especially if there's reports out that it's down to three teams. Let's say it's, or two teams, Mets, Yankees, or, you know, maybe Yankees, Mets, Phillies, Yankees, Mets, Dodgers, whatever the three teams are. I definitely think that Scott Boras is going to end up, for some reason, having to talk about the Juan Soto decision and when it'll be made at the winter meetings. I've got it finishing up in the 2 days after the winter meetings, not before.
Okay. Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. And Boras is going to have a lot to talk about in that press conference with between Soto and Bregman. And
we're going to get more of those dumb puns like he did at the general manager meetings where he was giving the puns for all the different players of free agents. But his class, to your point, yeah, Blake Snell, Corbin Burns, Alex Bregman, like it's a huge class of free agents. And honestly, it all, Pete Alonso, right? I think it all runs through Scott Boras, which is just frustrating, right? especially if you're the teams like the Dodgers, like the Braves, who don't really do a lot of business with Scott Boras because they don't like to sign free agents at the top of the market outside of Shohei Ohtani and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. So we'll definitely see what happens. Quick pitch real quick. Interesting. Speaking of the Dodgers, they signed Cardinals Cardinals veteran reliever Giovanni Gallegos to a minor league deal with an invite to spring training. 2019 through 2022, one of the better relievers in the National League. 2.84 ERA, strikeout rate over 30%. Signed a two-year extension, put up a 4.42 in 2023, and then a 6.53 last year, got released in early August. He's reportedly been trying to work on his mechanics, the velocity on his fastball. Do you think the Dodgers fix him? And how frustrating is it going to be when he saves 45 games for the Dodgers in 2025?
The Dodgers aren't on that upper echelon of pitching factories that I named earlier, but they're not that far off. So I do think that the Dodgers can fix him. The only issue is going to be is if they can keep him healthy, because pitchers go there to sit on the injured list for quite a while. But it's going to be very, very frustrating whenever they do fix him and he does save 45 games and brings home the World Series MVP in 2025.
It's not going to be Shohei throwing two perfect games in the World Series and hitting for the home run cycle. This to me feels like this is one of the moves that there's half a dozen teams that should be all over. And I think we'll probably end up hearing there were a couple other teams in on this. But yeah, a guy who was excellent for a couple of years and then had a kind of a drastic and sudden decline in performance. Bring him in for a physical, see if you can figure out what happened, see if you can fix him. A minor league deal, there's no way this is going to be that much money, but if it pays off, it pays off huge. And I guess if you have so much money invested in the stars like the Dodgers do, you got to find values like this somewhere. And I think this is there's literally almost no risk to this. Given the amount of money he's making, there is no risk to this for the Dodgers. That's pocket change to them. But if it works out, this is an incredibly high upside move that can pay a ton of pay back a ton in 2025. So love this for the Dodgers. Hate this for the rest of us. The World Series champions get a little bit richer, although they do have questions of their own when you look at how many of their pitchers are expected to be ready to start the regular season. There was a lot of, it's a graphic going around of like the, what was it? I think they used like 13 different starters or something. Like nine of them are expected to either end the season injured. I'm sorry, they used 17 different starters. Now, some of those were relievers, right? They did, I think they had four guys working as four or five guys working as openers. But still, it's how many of those guys are expected not to be available in 2025 or have questions because they finished 24 injured will be really interesting to see what happens. By the way, this has been First Pitch for Monday, November 25th. If you're listening on audio, do us a favor, leave us a five-star review. If you're on YouTube, subscribe to the channel, hit the notification bell. Either way, tell your friends. Go to firstpitchpodcast.com to get their daily MLB fix. And until next time, this has been First Pitch.